you. From this time, both they and Sarah and Mary J., who live in the same house with them, have heard several times in a week delightful music for a quarter of an hour at a time. They often hear it before those persons appear, often when they do not appear. They asked me whether they were good or bad spirits, but I could not resolve them. A remarkable dream. Tuesday, November 17. One was relating a remarkable story which I thought worthy to be remembered. 2 years ago, a gentleman of large fortune in Kent dreamed that he was walking through the churchyard and saw a new monument with the following inscription. Here lieth the body of Samuel Savage, Esquire, who departed this life on September 1772, aged blank. He told his friends in the morning and was much affected, but the impression soon wore off. But on that day, he did depart, and a stone was erected with that very inscription. A gentlewoman present added an account equally surprising, which she received from the person's own mouth. Mrs. B., when about 14 years of age, being at a boarding school a mile or two from her father's, dreamed she was on the top of the church steeple when a man came up and threw her down to the roof of the church. Yet she seemed not much hurt, till he came to her again and threw her to the bottom. She thought she looked hard at him and said, "Now you have hurt me sadly, that I shall hurt you worse, and wait." A week after, she was to go to her father's. She set out early in the morning. At the entrance of a little wood, she stopped and doubted whether she should not go around instead of through it. But knowing no reason, she went straight through till she came to the other side. Just as she was going over the stile, a man pulled her back by the hair. She immediately knew it was the same man whom she had seen in her dream. She fell on her knees and begged him, "For God's sake, do not hurt me any more." He put his hands round her neck and squeezed her so that she instantly lost her senses. He then stripped her, carried her a little way, and threw her into a ditch. Meantime, her father's servant, coming back to the school and hearing she was gone without him, walked back. Coming to the stile, he heard several groans and looking about saw many drops of blood. He traced them to the ditch whence the groans came. He lifted her up, not knowing her at all, as her face was covered with blood, carried her to a neighboring house. Running to the village, he quickly brought a surgeon. She was just alive, but her throat was much hurt, so that she could not speak at all. Just then, a young man of the village was missing. Search being made, he was apprehended in an alehouse 2 miles off. He had all her clothes with him in a bag, which, he said, he found. It was 3 months before she was able to go abroad. He was arraigned at the assizes. She knew him perfectly and swore to the man. He was condemned and soon after executed. Wednesday, December 2nd, I preached at the new preaching house in the parish of Bromley. In speaking severally to the members of the society, I was surprised at the openness and artlessness of the people. Such I should never have expected to find within 10 miles of London. Wesley's Letters and Friends, 1773, Friday, January 1st. We, as usual, solemnly renewed our covenant with God. Monday the 4th, I began revising my letters and papers. One of them was written above 150 years ago, in 1619. I suppose by my grandfather's father, to her he was to marry in a few days. Several were written by my brothers and me when at school, many while we were at the university, abundantly testifying, if it be worth knowing, what was our aim from our youth up. Thursday the 7th. I called where a child was dying of the smallpox and rescued her from death, and the doctors. They were giving her saffron, etc., to drive them out. Can anyone be so ignorant still? We observed Friday the 8th as a day of fasting and prayer on account of the general want of trade and scarcity of provisions. The next week I made an end of revising my letters, and from those I had both written and received, I could not but make one remark, that for above these 40 years, of all the friends who were once the most closely united and afterwards separated from me, every one had separated himself. He left me, not I him. And from both mine and their own letters, the steps whereby they did this are clear and undeniable. Wednesday, February 24th. A very remarkable paragraph was published in one of the Edinburgh papers. We learn from the Rosses in the county of Donegal in Ireland that a Danish man of war called the North Crown, commanded by the Baron Delfield, arrived off those islands from a voyage of discovery toward the pole. They sailed from Bornholm in Norway the 1st of June, 1769, with stores for 18 months, and some able astronomers, landscape painters, and every apparatus suitable to the design, and steering north by east, half east, for 37 days, with a fair wind and open sea, discovered a large rocky island, which having doubled, they proceeded west-northwest till the 17th of September, when they found themselves in a strong current between two high lands, seemingly about 10 leagues distance, which carried them at a prodigious rate for 3 days, when, to their great joy, they saw the mainland of America that lies between the most westerly part of the settlements on Hudson's River and California. Here they anchored in a fine cove and found abundance of wild deer and buffalo, with which they victualed, and sailing southward in 3 months got into the Pacific Ocean and returned by the Straits of Le Maine and the West India Islands. They have brought many curiosities, particularly a prodigious bird called a condor or contos, about 6 feet in height, of the eagle kind, whose wings expanded measure 22 feet 4 inches. After bartering some skins with the country people for meal, rum, and other necessaries, they sailed for Bremen to wait the thaw previous to their return to Copenhagen. February 24, 1773. If this account is true, one would hope not only the King of Denmark will avail himself of so important a discovery. I came to Liverpool on Saturday, March 20th. Monday the 27th, the captain was in haste to get my chaise on board. About 11 we went on board ourselves, and before 1 we ran on a sandbank. So, the ship being fast, we went ashore again. Tuesday the 23rd, we embarked again on board the Freemason, with 6 other cabin passengers, 4 gentlemen and 2 gentlewomen, one of whom was daily afraid of falling in labor. This gave me several opportunities of talking closely and of praying with her and her companion. We did not come abreast of Holyhead till Thursday morning. We had then a strong gale and a rolling sea. Most of the passengers were sick enough, but it did not affect me at all. In the evening, the gentleman desired I would pray with them, so we concluded the day in a solemn and comfortable manner. Wesley and his chaise. Friday the 26th. We landed at Dunleary and hired a coach to Dublin. On Monday and Tuesday I examined the society, a little lessened but now well united together. I was a little surprised to find the commissioners of the customs would not permit my chaise to be landed because, they said, the captain of a packet boat had no right to bring over goods. Poor pretense. However, I was more obliged to them than I then knew, for had it come on shore, it would have been utterly spoiled. Monday, April 5th, having hired such a chaise as I could, I drove to Edenderry. Monday the 12th, I preached at Val Enneslow in Aghrim. Tuesday the 13th, as I went into Eyre Court, the street was full of people, who gave us a loud huzza when we passed through the marketplace. I preached in the open air to a multitude of people, all civil and most of them serious. A great awakening has been in this town lately, and many of the most notorious and profligate sinners are entirely changed and are happy witnesses of the gospel salvation. Incidents in Ireland. Wednesday the 21st, some applied to the Quakers at Enniscorthy for the use of their meeting house. They refused, so I stood at Hugh McLaughlin's door, and both those within and without could hear. I was in doubt which way to take from hence, one of my chase horses being much tired, till a gentleman of Ballyrain near Wexford told me, if I would preach at his house the next evening, he would meet me on the road with a fresh horse. So I complied, though it was some miles out of the way. Accordingly, he met us on Thursday the 22nd, 6 or 7 miles from Enniscorthy, but we found his mare would not draw at all, so we were forced to go on as we could. I preached in the evening at Ballyrain to a deeply serious congregation. Early in the morning we set out, and at 2 in the afternoon came to Ballyback Ferry. A troop of sailors ran down to the shore to see the chase put on the boat. I was walking at a small distance when I heard them cry out, "Avast! Avast! The coach is overset into the river." I thought, however, it is well my bags are on shore, so my papers are not spoiled. In less than an hour they fished up the chaise and got it safe into the boat. As it would not hold us all, I got in myself, leaving the horses to come after. At 3:30 I came to Passage. Finding no post-chaise could be had and having no time to spare, I walked on 6 or 7 miles to Waterford and began preaching without delay on "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." Sunday the 25th, word being brought to me that the mayor was willing I should preach in the Bowling Green, I went thither in the evening. A huge multitude was quickly gathered together. I preached on, "I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God." Some attempted to disturb, but without success. The bulk of the congregation were deeply attentive. But as I was drawing to a conclusion, some of the papists set on their work in earnest. They knocked down John Christian, with 2 or 3 more who had endeavored to quiet them, and then began to roar like the waves of the sea. But hitherto could they come, and no farther. Some gentlemen who stood near me rushed into the midst of them, and after bestowing some heavy blows, seized the ringleader and delivered him to the constable, and one of them undertook to conduct me home. So few received any hurt but the rioters themselves, which I trust will make them more peaceable for the time to come. A neglected school. Thursday, May 13. We went on through a most dreary country to Galway, where at the late survey there were 20,000 Papists and 500 Protestants. But which of them are Christians, have the mind that was in Christ, and walked as he walked? And without this, how little does it avail whether they are called Protestants or Papists? At 6 I preached in the courthouse to a large congregation who all behaved well. Friday the 14th. In the evening I preached at Ballinrobe, and on Saturday went on to Castlebar. Entering the town, I was struck with the sight of the charter school. No gate to the courtyard, a large chasm in the wall, heaps of rubbish before the house door, broken windows in abundance, the whole a picture of slothfulness, nastiness, and desolation. I did not dream there were any inhabitants till the next day I saw about 40 boys and girls walking from church. As I was just behind them, I could not but observe, one, that there was neither master nor mistress, though it seems they were both well. Two, that both boys and girls were completely dirty. Three, that none of them seemed to have any garters on, their stockings hanging about their heels. Four, that in the heels even of many of the girls' stockings were holes larger than a crown piece. I gave a plain account of these things to the trustees of the charter school in Dublin. Whether they are altered or no, I cannot tell. Mobbed by Masons. Monday the 24th, about noon I preached at Tawny Lawman. One of my horses having a shoe loose, I borrowed Mr. Watson's horse and left him with the chaise. When we came near Enniskillen, I desired 2 only to ride with me, and the rest of our friends to keep at a distance. Some Masons were at work on the first bridge, who gave us some coarse words. We had abundance more as we rode through the town, but soldiers being in the street and taking knowledge of me in a respectful manner, the mob shrank back. An hour after, Mr. Watson came in the chaise. Before he came to the bridge, many ran together and began to throw whatever came next to hand. The bridge itself they had blocked up with large stones that a carriage could not pass. But an old man cried out, "Is this the way to you, strangers?" and rolled away the stones. The mob quickly rewarded him by plastering him over with mortar from head to foot. They then fell upon the carriage, which they cut with stones in several places, and well nigh covered with dirt and mortar. From one end of the town to the other, the stones flew thick about the coachman's head. Some of them were 2 or 3 pounds weight, which they threw with all their might. But if one of them had struck him, it would have effectually prevented him from driving any further, and then doubtless they would have given an account of the chaise and horses. I preached at Sidor in the evening and morning, and then set out for Ruski. The road lay not far from Enniskillen. When we came pretty near the town, both men and women saluted us, first with bad words and then with dirt and stones. My horses soon left them behind, but not till they had broken one of the windows, the glass of which came pouring in upon me, but did me no further hurt. About an hour after, John Smith came to Enniskillen. The masons on the bridge, preparing for battle, he was afraid his horse would leap with him into the river, and therefore chose to alight. Immediately, they poured in upon him a whole shower of dirt and stones. However, he made his way through the town, though pretty much daubed and bruised. Wednesday the 26th, we set out at 2:30 and reached Omagh a little before 11. Finding I could not reach Ding Bridge by 2 o'clock in the chaise, I rode forward with all the speed I could. But the horse dropping a shoe, I was so retarded that I did not reach the place till between 3 and 4. I found the minister and the people waiting, but the church would not nearly contain them, so I preached near it to a mixed multitude of rich and poor churchmen, papists, and Presbyterians. I was a little weary and faint when I came, the sun having shone exceedingly hot, but the number and behavior of the congregation made me forget my own weariness. Having a good horse, I rode to the place where I was to lodge, 2 miles off, in about an hour. After tea, they told me another congregation was waiting, so I began preaching without delay. I warned them of the madness which was spreading among them, namely, leaving the church. Most of them, I believe, will take the advice, I hope all that are, of our society. Wesley at Derry, Armagh. Thursday the 27th. I went on to Londonderry, Friday the 28th. I was invited to see the bishop's palace, a grand and beautiful structure, and his garden, newly laid and exceedingly pleasant. Here I innocently gave some offense to the gardener by mentioning the English of a Greek word. But he set us right, warmly assuring us that the English name of the flower is not crane's bill, but geranium. Saturday the 29th, we walked out to one of the pleasantest spots which I have seen in the kingdom. It is a garden laid out on the steep side of a hill, one shady walk of which in particular commands all the vale and the hill beyond. The owner finished his walks and died. Saturday, June 5th, Armagh. I walked over the fine improvements which the primate has made near his lodge. The ground is hardly 2 miles round, but it is laid out to the best advantage. Part is garden, part meadow, part planted with shrubs or trees of various kinds. The house is built of fine white stone and is fit for a nobleman. He intends to carry away a bog which lies behind it and have a large piece of water in its place. He intends also to improve the town greatly and to execute many other grand designs. I doubt too many, even for a primate of Ireland who is above 70 years old.